What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the offense and that big win over the Bengals, 24-0. It couldn't help but talk about the defense some and what we were happy about in that first episode, but Dev Panchwa joining me again. Dev, was great taking a first hour to talk about football with you and a long overdue conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. It was. It was a fun game to talk through. Weird game to talk through, but I enjoyed it and looking forward to this one. Looking forward to this conversation for the same reason. It's like, how many plays do we have to chart with the line and the breakdown of that from your point of view?
The Ravens lost snap count in a big way. We talked about that on the defensive show as well, but with only 40 offensive snaps, they kind of made the most of them in terms of 24 runs, 16 passes. They ran the ball very effectively when they weren't kneeling it out. We talked about some of the remaining playoff structure scenarios and whatnot, but they must win week 18 now is the simple question. And then they need to win no fewer games than the Steelers do over the next 2 weeks. But there is also, we talked about the possibility of the Ravens having a week 17 rest week.
Yes, no, exactly. I think that is very realistic. I don't actually think that's the way it's going to unfold, frankly. Like if you look at Detroit, that game, I'm not a believer in the Steelers just yet. And I think the Ravens are going to put together their best effort of the year against New England. That's my prediction. So maybe okay. I'm going a little ahead of things, but I think it's going to come together. They're going to play a good game. Whether they win, I don't know. I feel like if they do, they will, because I just don't think New England is like as good as their record per se. So, yeah, I think that's how it's going to turn out.
Gamblers are basically saying right now by the money line that the Ravens win this game about 57% of the time. That's four times in seven. And I think there's probably about a 70% chance that the Lions beat the Steelers. So if we're talking 4/7 of 70%, we're talking about a 40% chance that the week 17 game is made non-meaningful, which would be a very big break, I think, for the Ravens in terms of getting healthy for week 18, probably for the Steelers as well. But I don't know exactly, other than TJ Watt, who they're waiting on to come back.
They seem okay in that department. The only thing is they're an older team. So what I could think of is it just helps them because of the amount of older players they have. They can have a week off. The Ravens have, for sure, they have some guys that are banged up and that are playing through things, and it would just be a really good thing if they had that opportunity.
All right, so the Ravens will get Lamar Jackson healthy, and the Steelers can work on their cane repair and whatnot to get ready for week 18. Let's talk a little offensive line. Let me get my notes together here.
Yeah, and I thought with the line play, there were some interesting things that stood out, Ken. And in particular, you hit on it at the top. Like, the run game was stellar. And from my point of view, I think that really showed up more so in the second half. But also, I could be wrong, but like, it just seemed like, and also with the lesser amount of snaps, they really just maximized their productivity and their explosion and just... they dominated like in a way that we haven't seen all year, maybe since week one against Buffalo. But like, I was curious about the guards. I know that those are always the top subject. If how much of a hand between Voorhees and Falele, they played and how well they played. And maybe we could start there.
Sure. If you want to start at guard, we can do that. So we'll start with Voorhees, because I saw PFF didn't give him a particularly good grade. And I try not to look at PFF before I grade it myself. But I was a little surprised, actually, they came out as negative as they did on him. I have him as an A for the game in his best game of the season. He had no pass rush events that he contributed to in any way. He didn't get penalized. He didn't allow any penetrations on a run play, which means he contributed to a run for a loss in any way. He did miss four blocks. And one other thing about Voorhees in this game was he's on the ground a lot. Now, that's serious if that causes missed blocks. Okay, it's not as serious when you're not losing a level one block. And I think PFF might have scored him down for that. I think that's what some of this difference comes into. He made two blocks in level two. He had one pancake. He made 5 out of 7 pulls. One of the big things we've been covering on a weekly basis is Voorhees had a fantastic pull streak going, and he still had only missed about 2 out of his last maybe 30 or so. But 5 for 7 is a little bit below his standard. It's still not terrible. But he had a pretty good game. And I think we hit on the first episode that Voorhees' body is not entirely right for playing guard. First of all, he's short armed. That's bad. Any offensive line position, but he's a lean, tall guy, as opposed to wears his weight like an apple around his waist, like a lot of us do, unfortunately, me included. And not in his rear end and his glutes and whatnot, where it would do him a lot as good as a guard, but he's been pretty mobile for the Ravens.
That's a big deal to me that he can pull, get out in space, hit his marks. Because it looked, again, we talked about the counter game in the first show as mm-hmm. well, the effectiveness of it. I admittedly didn't pay close attention to the pullers and like if they were, again, this gets back to your analysis, but like if they're hitting their marks, they were getting there on time. But it seems like that's part of it, right? And the ability to pull, the ability to have the mobility in the run game, I think has been missing more this year just from my vantage point than last year, definitely in 2023, right? Like it just seemed to be lacking enough of that. So if he's had the type of game you've scored, and then on top of that, this is something they can open up going forward, like with the play calling and the entire run game and the pass game. Frankly, because everything that they can build off of that run, those run plays for play action, for movement, that's exciting. That's encouraging to hear.
Yeah, they've actually gone the last few weeks to more, and we'll get into Falele in just a second, but in terms of using Falele more to pull, and he's been more effective than he had been. He went 5 for 6 in this game, in a game that wasn't really good overall, but he went 5 for 6 as a puller. And so there are some positive things to say. I'll move right over to Falele since it seems like we want to talk about him next. He made 29 out of 37 blocks, so he missed 6. And by the way, only 37 scored blocks is a really low total for one game. It's obviously the 40 snaps, less 3 kneels. That's like all he's got left. Yeah, basically like a preseason game. So he missed 6 blocks. He did allow 1 pressure. It wasn't a terrible pressure, but he pancaked his assignment right in the middle of the cone. So the guy basically backed him up into the cone where Falele pancaked him, and then Jackson had to move around that to make his throw. He did allow 1/3 of the quarterback hit they had in the game. They did a great job of the offensive line not allowing much of the total of 4 sacks. It was Lamar having a couple where he was running around for longer than 3 seconds, but the line held up, gave him ample time and space for 3 seconds. Then he had one where it was more on Linderbaum or half on Linderbaum anyway. And then a 4th one that was a free runner that there wasn't really an offensive line that was responsible for it. Offensive lineman. It was on the free run, but getting back to Falele for a second, 0.70 points per play, adjustment gets him to the D level, right in the middle of the D level, 3 level 2 blocks, 2 pancakes and 5 out of 6 on pulls. Did not have a highlight in this game. It's strange, but he's really changed the nature of his game some in the last few weeks. And I don't think it's necessarily for the worse. He's become a much better run blocker, been more focused on that. And he hasn't been as good as a pass blocker where a lot of his success had come from. The other success that comes from relative to other scoring methods is Daniel Falele doesn't take a lot of penalties. And that's really important. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't. That is something I'll give them too, based on well, the bottom line that you have, but something observationally, you see that more from everybody on this line. Well, really, I think it's Ronnie that comes up, but I don't know to what extent. Like, and maybe Voorhees, like those two kind of names they call out is what I recall, like off the top of my head. But you're right, I don't ever hear Falele's name called for penalty. And there were some things in pass pro that were interesting. There's a play, well, the touchdown play down the sideline to Zay. And what I saw for him was he got enough of the block, but it was one of those things where he squared up, and I thought was just like he squared up and he was able to ride out the lineman. I think it was a lineman or a linebacker. I can't recall.
Linebacker. Yep.
Yeah. It was just enough, but like it's something where if Lamar was able to have enough time to make the throw, I just would love to see that be a little bit more cleaner and just keep riding that block, right? Like all the way through.
Right.
He just lost him. And maybe that gets back to his lack of, maybe it's his arms, like just kind of like can't get turned you know, that way. And maybe he's still stiff. I don't know. I don't know what you thought of. Basically, I don't know what you thought of that play. I thought that play was good enough, but with a worse quarter, with a lesser quarterback, I don't know if that works, right?
So here's how I scored the play. First of all, every other lineman got a one on the play, so they all made their blocks. He was Barrett Carter was coming from level two, and his rush was a little late, and then Falele took him down 12-6. I thought that, first of all, on that play, that he did the right thing. He picked up the guy in time initially. My problem was they didn't quite stay with the block long enough on the back end, but by the time he released him, it was already too late. It was well past 3 seconds. So that was the good news about that. And Lamar got the ball out for the 28-yard score to Zay in the left side. And also you can kind of picture this. If he's taking him around the right side of that pocket, 12-6, that's not anywhere near the cone. So it's not like he's impeding the area of the pocket that Lamar needs to step into, which I'm highly protective of, mm-hmm. as opposed to behind the quarterback, which I'm not as protective of. In terms of him throwing that football. So while it was a zero for him, I thought he could have done more to maintain his block. I still thought that it had minimal impact. It certainly wasn't a pressure on the play.
Good breakdown. That's awesome to hear, because I personally, from a football perspective, was looking at it that way, right? Like physically, I think he could have done more, which he could have. It didn't impact the play. It was a successful play. I don't think it would have. It should not have impacted the play, no matter what, really, because the ball should have been out on that time, like that timing. But gets to a macro point for me, which is like if he can do more of that, if he does his job enough in those instances, and then he's, to your point, getting better in the run blocking scenarios, like you'll take that. I'll take that.
Sure.
Less of the big losses to me, and just kind of being even marginally good, as almost the bare minimum, I'll take it.
So we talked about processing in the first show to a good degree about Falele. So I don't want to go over that ground again, but that he needs to improve that. And wherever he plays next season, I hope he gets better at the processing component. Yep. In terms of the other thing is the finishing component. That's the other thing that's somewhat frustrating about Falele. He's had more pancakes in recent weeks. I'd love to make a chart of just that, but I don't have all that information in one point. So I'd have to collect it. But he's had more pancakes in recent weeks. That play is a play where Barrett Carter should have been on the ground with Falele flopping on top of him. That was my feeling about the play. Take him 12-6 and then fall on top. Take him to the ground because he's going to go to the ground. And then go ahead and drop on top of him, and go ahead and drop with your weight. He's not a quarterback; he's not protected, so you're gonna end up getting that guy concerned about rushing against you, and other people are gonna see it on tape. And Falele just needs to be more of a highly physical finisher. I get the sense that Daniel Falele was probably, despite extreme size, never a playground bully, and I think it's probably hurting him as an NFL lineman.
Yeah, I think so too. We talked about the mentality of the offensive linemen, right? Like the guys that we talked about, that Yanda play in the playoff game against Denver. In Denver, he pushes Ray Rice threw the, you know, to get the first down on the marker, but like, and finishes the block. I mean, it's just something ingrained in the better ones. And I agree. It shows up a lot where he does what he needs to, but man, like for his size and his overall, presence of what he is does not match up on the field at all.
I want to do one more play from Falele's thing to talk about this. I think it's a 29 yard run right by Henry. I have to look at this, but it was in the third quarter. Yeah. It's the first play of Q3. Okay. The run right for 29, the first Ravens play of Q3. Right. On that play, Harbaugh has gushed over it in terms of everybody did their job right. And it was a misdirection play where the misdirection was with the blockers. So they had Ricard blocking to the left and they had Falele pulling to the left while the run went right. Okay. If you look at the inside linebackers on that play, they had three off-ball linebackers. Let me make it clear. All three off-ball linebackers followed Ricard and followed the pull of Falele. And even though Falele didn't make his block, he was a P0 I've got him for on the play. He didn't really have an impactful block, and Ricard was actually blocking that guy already, and he kind of just actually kind of bounced off him to one side. I couldn't give him credit for a block, but he drove traffic with him. He dragged traffic with him in the gravitational manner that we expect. And I was like, wow, that's a cool additional element of misdirection the Ravens have got with this.
Yeah, they must have just went to the lab and started getting back into some things that – where can we use him best?
Yeah.
Right now – if you're asking him to square up and just block downhill straight ahead, it gets back to what we just talked about. He's not that guy. He's not driving people off of the ball. But get him in space. And I saw that too with the Nick. I think there was another play, to your point, or maybe it was the same play, where he just occupied the space and it was enough. Like, he was in the way. I'm not saying that is ideal. But if he does play to his strengths, that's one way to do it. So this could be, if they did go back to the lab and think up between Voorhees and Falele, like, all right, this is where these guys are better utilized, better suited. That's pretty exciting because it's just not been working out for a while. Yeah. So I think we got, do we have the guards covered?
We're the guards covered. Who would you like to talk about next?
Okay, so I wanted to jump back into something you said about Linderbaum. There was a play. Well, mm-hmm. Let's talk about Linderbaum, and then I wanted to hear your overall. Sure. There was a play, the sack. I saw the same thing you did, which was like, he just got, and it happens to the best of them. He just got his run handed to him. So, well, maybe we can start with that play. I think that was the one where you could say it was on the line and him in particular, but overall. Curious about your grades.
So his overall grades out pretty well with the exception of that play. So 37 plays, 34 blocks, one missed. He allowed half a pressure. That was split early in the game, also with a free runner that occurred. It was on the 3rd-and-3 play that ended that first drive where they ended up getting a field goal to go up 17-0. So that play, he allowed a pressure on that. And then we have the play where he allowed half of the sack. So he got backed up by number 98. I forget who that is. Is that the rookie Jenkins or is that another player? So looking at that real quickly, that's TJ Slayton. So not a big name defensive lineman, by the way. Pretty piss poor guy in this league. He got backed up straight into him. Somehow PFF gave Kolar the sack on that. Now, Kolar didn't play great, but he allowed kind of what was a fairly late, arrived right at 3 seconds. The man to beat him outside and took him down. How I scored it was half and half. Always the initial pressure with me gets more, and that's a big ongoing discussion, I'll say, although I'm sure they consider the matter closed, that I have with PFF is that they really need to award partial sacks or sacks of shares of sacks. But the more our system is the same, the less information you're going to get out of the differences from the two systems. So what I'd say is just, you know, we'll score it differently and we'll not be just repeating the same experiment in a lab, and we'll hopefully learn something new from it. But anyway, that was half a sack to me for Linderbaum. Overall, C+ for the game, had 6 blocks in level 2, 2 highlight blocks, didn't pancake, and he wasn't used to pull at any point during this game. He does have big responsibilities on counter plays that he has to take a very flat angle, but he's very solid with doing that to deal with some of that vacated space to the side the pullers are coming from.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. Why, from the vantage point of like why he's not being used as much of as a weapon as he has in the past as a puller in space, because you probably, well, that responsibility is you defined it as big, and then the counter of that would be what they get from the other, what they actually get from the pullers plus that. So it's probably like that's the better of the two. But that's interesting. Yeah. No. And then good to hear from Linderbaum's side. And then I know you brought up Roger having a great game, and mm-hmm. Watt was the last game, but
yep,
I'm getting the game, the players mixed up, but getting to Watt, he was fantastic the week before. And it sounds like what you said, and then looks like, because I saw, I mean, he's just been playing really well lately, but wanted to get the full breakdown there.
Yeah, I've been very happy with his play. 37 plays, he missed 5 blocks, but he didn't have any other negative events. So first of all, anytime you can do that at tackle, you're going to score very well. So he didn't have a penalty. He didn't have any pressure events. He didn't allow a penetration. Those are the big five you want to avoid there. Anyway, 0.86, I gave him a relatively small adjustment. And the one reason I gave him only a small adjustment was he was run out of a pressure by Lamar. So the 12-yard run Lamar had fairly early in the game was a big play to get out of pressure. That was really on Rosengarten. I'm sure PFF probably scored it as a pressure. I have a different accounting for it, but it's similar in terms of he gets docked some adjustment on that hurt his score. Anyway, A- game for him, 4 blocks in level 2, 1 pancake, 2 out of 2 on poles. No highlights in the game, but I thought another very workmanlike game. And you know, there's two things about Roger Rosengarten. First of all, I'm plenty happy projecting him into the right tackle spot for 2026, and I think the Ravens roll with that and their chances. They don't need to consider another tackle, and they're in a great place of not needing an offensive tackle entering a draft, which is, it has been a while since that's been true for the Baltimore Ravens.
True,
and that's a lot of draft capital. Whenever you need one, it's a lot of draft capital. And the other thing about it is I don't see any reason or any indication that he's going to be moving to left tackle either. I think that the two next left tackles for the Baltimore Ravens are Ronnie Stanley and Carson Vincent.
Yeah, that's a good segue to those two players, because this was an exciting situation. Also, the best of the – I don't want to put the cart before the horse on the other rookie player, because we're going to talk about Jones. I want to talk about Jones, but – start sticking with the tackles and Vincent. It's like I think everybody's been itching to see what he would do in live action. So I want to hear what your take is. And especially if you're thinking they're in good hands, I mean, that's more of a long-term topic, but like, were there things there that you saw from his performance, again, limited snaps. And then also on the flip side, Ronnie, those two and how you had them, how you saw them play, I should say.
Okay, so let's go with Ronnie first, since that's a lot of data here. So 34 plays, 32 blocks, 1 missed, so that's good. 1/3 of a quarterback hit, also not terrible. His only real negative score for the game was the offsetting penalty with the unnecessary roughness after the play. And it's just a whole lot of bad things occurred on that. First of all, I'd have loved if it had been offsetting penalties after the application of the defensive hold that occurred on the play, because Stanley's behavior after the play ended up costing the Ravens 5 yards.
Sure.
It would have been a first down anyway. It was a first down anyway, first and 10, but it would have cost them a first and 10, 5 yards closer to the goal line is all that it was. That's results based to look at that and say it only cost the Ravens the impact of that penalty. I'm in the middle somewhere. So I'm going to tell you the extremes on this, and you can decide where you grade this. If you give him the full -7 points, he should have gotten for a 15-yard penalty that also is declinable, then that would be a -7 to the score. He would have gotten 24 points, and he would have ended up scoring in the high 70s, which would have been about a C game for the level. But I charged him -3. I docked him all of his adjustment anyway for the game, and it ended up being he's came in at 0.82. I think that's as positive as you could possibly look at it. So he's between a very low B and a high C in terms of his quality of play in this game. And by the way, Ronnie Stanley at his age, if he's a C plus player every week and he gives you that week, that is perfectly fine. They'll get good value out of this contract if they get through that through the end of the 2026 season.
I agree with that. It gives him a lot of latitude. You need him to be playing at that level. He doesn't need to be the elite all pro first team all pro player that he's been able to do in the past. To me, and this is the first time we've gotten together on this show to talk this in depth about the line or in general. I think this is first chance, right? So I think he's had a good, like you said, the fair. That's a grade I could see being applied to the entire season for him, or like just his overall play has been at that kind of range. And I'll take that. There was the game he had against Garrett where everybody was getting smoked in that game. So it's that's just a legend doing his thing. But overall, he's been very good.
Yeah, he's been very solid, by the way, since the bye. Before the bye, okay, A- versus Buffalo, then FDF in his next three games. And he had that stretch where he basically didn't play, and he made only 4.5 points on 36 blocks versus Kansas City, where he played 15 snaps. Houston didn't play at all. Los Angeles Rams, he played 21 snaps. So he actually got a grade of an F in that game. But it was a terrible run of three games, and he's playing hurt. Came back from the bye. Since then, C, C minus, C plus, C minus, A, B, C plus, B.
That's good.
I couldn't ask for more than that. A trend line is great for that.
Yeah, there's nothing else to say about it. I think that's really positive.
So, anybody want to talk rookies?
I would love to hear the breakdown of both. I'll ask for two for one or however you want to take that question. So,
let me start with Vincent, because we're all very, very excited. He played as many snaps as anybody in the entire NFL in the preseason. And I thought he might play, several hundred NFL snaps, maybe 250 or something before he played his first, preseason snaps, before he played his first regular season snap. Well, that didn't happen. He came in on his first regular season snap. It was the last play of the Ravens drive that ended Q3. So Stanley went out, got rolled. At that point, he went out and they had a extended pocket. It was actually ample time and space with a 3-man rush initially. He had responsibility for Asai on the left side. He bangs Asai around like he's a little rag doll. Hmm. And Asai's given Stanley a lot of trouble, by the way. He blocked him once, and then Asai came back to try and loop around him. He blocks him again. Asai gets basically stumbles backward. He gets forward again because he sees Lamar's still got the football. He goes after him again, and he hits him a third time. And it was, I in some ways, it made me think, I'd like him to maintain that block. But on the other side, I'm thinking, he's just beating him up. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's really great to see. We've heard all these things about Vincent needing to get into the weight room and all the things I've watched him this summer and spring and summer grow into a guy that Warhop was riding like you might helicopter parent your child, who's having a little bit of difficulty in school. And he's just play after play. He's got technical adjustments for me, but Warhop had really bought into Vincent. Of course, he pounded the table for him originally at draft time, but he also has bought into him, obviously, in terms of how much coaching he obviously needed to get here. But boy, he looked good on that play. And then he made two more good run blocks, in particular, a really good run block on the 22-yard run by Mitchell. Neither a highlight, but that first one was a highlight on his first NFL play, which is kind of cool.
That is fantastic to hear, especially, getting back to the conversation we had about Falele's lack of aggressiveness and aggression. Like, I'll take that, and then you can work. Let's work on the technique. Let's work on the fundamentals, right? But I want a guy out there that's gonna play with that attitude. Yeah. So that is music to my ears. He's talented. He's very talented with
ideal frame guy.
So everything's there on that side, but the physicality is just. It's always an X factor to me in this league. Guys will make it far with that, even if they don't always have the physical skills, right? Good stuff.
All right, so let's go to Emory Jones really quickly. Only was in for one block and pancaked his man. So that's really nice to see. It was the highlight, but he got him to the ground. And I think the Bengals had kind of had enough by that point in the game, but it still was impressive for Emery to do that. He hasn't played a lot of snaps this year and didn't look that good in his first game, largely because of a holding penalty. That's a pretty significant negative on 15 plays. But this was good. And then we saw him. This is his first snap since that first Cincinnati game. Where he had the hold and got scored 8 out of 15 points in that game, but 1 out of 1 in this game. And he, looked like we're definitely going to see more from Emery Jones. I don't know if it's going to be this year, it's going to be next year, but we'll see from him soon enough. I'm sure he's a big part of what they'll do in 26.
I hope so. I'm excited about his talent, just the same as Vincent.
Yeah. All right, let's move forward and talk about individual players. You're the guest. Who would you like to talk about first?
All right. I've been talking him up this, I think, between two shows now. It's our guy Charlie Kolar. I thought two things. One is he played well. I thought he was out there taking care of business on his blocking assignments, really added a lot of value in that ground game that they used to finish off the Bengals. But I just liked also the thought process behind that. Like, we don't know for Monken exactly, right? But like, It was a point of emphasis to get him out there and be involved with Ricard. Like, that kind of just, those two guys are they can be both of them. We know what Ricard can do, but Kolar's, I think, really developed into a very good lead blocker in the run game. Yeah. So, your thoughts on that? Or
Very positive on Kolar. He had a hand in the sack, of course, and I'm not going to, don't want to downplay that in terms of his pass blocking. He's been up and down this year, but his run blocking effort, very high level. On the 29 yard play that Henry had to start the second half, he's way out in front of that play, and he's racing to get there. And there was a guy for him to block, as it turned out. Rosengarten couldn't really hold his block all the way, and Kolar finished it for him. So it was good to see.
Yeah, and they can do some fun things with him, right? And I don't think we've seen the full extent of his usage in the open field and just pulling. Yeah. And you saw some of that with Miami's game. Run game is very fun. Like, I like where this is going. And I just thought he deserves a major shout.
Before I pick my next player here, do you have a number at which you'd want to bring Charlie Kolar back?
Like,
3 years for some amount, let's say.
$8 million.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Very hard call because of how much they just dropped on Andrews. What about, I have eight million maybe is a comfort zone for me. I just feel like some team's going to come out and they're going to blow the Ravens out of the water. Yeah. But yeah.
I think so too.
I want them back though. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think they can afford 8 million. If it was 3 years for 15, I'd be really thrilled about it. If some other team says we want him at 3 years for 30, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Would shock me. And that's really just a matter of having two other teams bidding because the Ravens won't bid it up that much. Mm-hmm. And what they'll usually do with a player like Kolar is they want to support his value from the compensatory pick formula. So they'll send him to the market with some kind of offer. And it might be like 3 years for 15 or 16 and a half million. It'd be some intermediate amount that they know other teams are going to be better, but it gives him a platform for negotiations with his new potential employer. So the Ravens do very well by departing players in those terms, by the way. I'm not saying they did it for Patrick Queen, but they do it for most free agents.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's very fair business going back to the Aussie days, right?
Like, yeah.
Here's a fair deal. This, if you want to come back and stay here, but you can use it, like you said, as a starting point to get a little more on the open market. I think he could definitely cash in though. Because, and I made this point offline, Ken, the rest of the league loves the Ravens players. I know the fans that we hear almost like, man, they draft terrible players. Like, who are these guys? They cash in. Malik Harrison cashed in to an extent with the Steelers, right?
Chris Ward.
Yeah, it's just the way things happen. And I go back to that, the guy from Minnesota, the tight end that they had.
Oliver
cashed in and he's done okay for himself, but never lived up to the contract. But yeah, no.
John Simpson, another one that, you know, obviously different viewpoints. I didn't like John Simpson because the penalty rate was too high and that really reduces value. But he's, a lot of people liked his technique along the line, which was perfectly okay. The Jets got him on a big contract and they're feeling the pain this year. They didn't feel it last year, but they're feeling it a little bit this year.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'll talk about, let's talk about Zay Flowers because it was an up and down game for Zay. Drop goes directly into the hands of the defensive back for interception. He had drop in the right corner of the end zone. He also made a very nice play to turn and find the ball that he looked a lot more open than he ended up being on the right sideline for that catch. And that it might have been intercepted. I think it was probably going to drop to the ground had he not caught the ball. Fantastic get open in the end zone. And they haven't, you know, one nice thing about that is they haven't used Zay deep too much this year. I mean, Marquise Brown, I mean, that was a staple route he had, was 7-8-9, in particular the post routes. were the ones that were a big part of his game. And in Torrey Smith, there was a lot of vertical routes. And in Zay's case, he's too valuable as a crossing weapon between level two and three for them to use him on deep routes, it seems.
Yeah, a lot of the overs, a lot of, like you said, those level twos over the middle. And I think there's two things to that, just from my look, well, just my analysis of Lamar's trust factor has just gone through the roof with Zay. Like, he seems to, like, when you're talking about just, I'm going to throw the ball over the middle, I believe he's going to secure the ball, big moments, he trusts him on third downs, whatever it is. Like, and Zay normally comes through. He had the pop-up, you know, drop on the interception, but, like, he takes hits. He's willing to do that dirty work. It's funny because I think Rashad Bateman's also very capable of doing those things as well, and that's faded this year. Not entirely sure why, but like Zay's doing a good job with it, but still has the capability of getting separation on sideline. We saw on the sideline route, right? So he can still do that and get that space. He'll give you a couple clunker plays, but he does mostly. He's getting the job done. And that catch he made, to your point, the play that was on the extension, and then like being able to field that football in traffic, and then make the play on the ball, and then ultimately come down with it. That was a great acrobatic catch.
It definitely involves some contortion there.
Yes. You know, another person that I thought stood out, and somebody that has just turned into a personal favorite of mine, is D-Hop. And we talked about, I think we talked about the 30-yard play. I mean, you know what? It's interesting. Harbaugh really comes out every week and talks about, D-Hop makes like two plays a game or three plays a game. And it's actually turned out that that's accurate, right? Like, as much as they want to get him more involved, and I think they missed on the touchdown. What was the touchdown that he was breaking open on? Was it last against the Steelers? I'm not remembering exactly which, or maybe it was the week before. But yeah, he makes the most of his opportunities. Mm-hmm. Like, if they ask him to catch a third down, he catches a third down. And the RPO play, like he was there, got him a big chunk play. And I just love his attitude. I mean, I think he's great for the locker room. Just a guy that's been at the top of the game, but he's come in here and he does his job and has a great attitude and wants to contribute. So
Hopkins had been a great contested catch receiver before he came to Baltimore, but he's never really had this high a percentage of his catches be contested. The guy, he does not have a lot in terms of separation left in the tank. So what you're getting is you're getting the crafty veteran receiver who can win a one-on-one matchup, and Lamar can trust to go get the football, usually outside the numbers where the safety cannot get involved. So it's going to be a mano-a-mano matchup with the corner, and Hopkins has been very good at that. This game is a little different. That 32-yard play was a reaction to the crowded line of scrimmage. Hopkins, you know, beat his guy on a slant, had a lot of open field in front of him, all of a sudden decided, wait, I should change directions. And then that wasn't a good idea. He probably cost himself a few yards. But Hopkins has averaged, I'll give you the total for the year, his yards per target are 9.3, which is his third best season of his career. He's only had two better years. This is DeAndre Hopkins, a potential Hall of Fame wide receiver, who was at 9.6 with Houston in 2018 and 9.5 in his second year with Houston. He's had a marvelous year in terms of any kind of rate statistics, and he's doing it all, basically, or a lot of it, on contested catches this year. So it's been very impressive.
I just think that speaks to how good he's playing, or how well he's playing.
Yeah,
to me, like, that's the stat you look at, like a guy who's just really making the most of these opportunities. He's still a really good player.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about Rasheen Ali, who has really increased his stock with me over the last few games. He's had some really good pass blocking games. He's proven to be a very good, valuable third down back. The catch for the 30-yard touchdown was exactly the magic sauce that the Ravens needed to get going in this game. It was their first score, right? Yeah. I believe that score occurred in the same place, basically, on the field. It was the right side of the field heading towards that end zone, where Brandon Stokley caught the ball to end the big drought in 2000. But that might have still been the old stadium. Might have still been the old stadium. Oh, well.
I think that's the old, but that, yeah, similar place, sure.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was a nice play by Ali there. We talked about it a little bit in the first show, so we won't go over that again, but he swam past that defensive lineman, sold the missed block to him in a way that he still came after Lamar, and that was a really fine play. I've liked his pass blocking for the most part. He had some good blocks in this one again too. How many sets and chips did he have? He was in there for one set and two chips. Last week, they used him to block 14 times, seven sets and seven chips in one game, which I think is the record for this season at any time. It was a tough matchup because, you know, he's got the Steelers players. He's generally blocking on the outside. So I've been very, very happy with his play. I think basically they'll cut Justice Hill next year, save $3.25 million and get cheap with Ali. And I got to say, he's a player I was wrong at, and you've got to be ready to readjust your evaluations of players as new data comes in. He's a guy that I am turned around on.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the pick at the time, but you know, just what his makeup was to me was just purely a kick returner that was explosive and had that juice. But I really like what he's turned into. Like you said, he's integral to the pass protection. Which is not an easy thing to step into, right? Because I think, you know, he's only in his second year, right? So he's still a young player, and he has been getting it done. And I hope this play, again, you put it on film, right? He can do this, and you got to be prepared for that, like defensively now, because his open space ability is legitimate. So yeah, I agree. He's turned into a pretty good player to replace Hill, but I know we got a couple other players, but I wanted to also hit on, this might be a little bit of a cherry picking thing, but like I thought Ricard also was interesting, because I also, I believe, if not mistaken, he was involved a little bit in pass pro as well. Something I've been wanting to see a little bit, they just seem to not have been having him in that role as much as they had last year, especially the beginning of last year. And even if we go back to 2023, he was a lot in that role, but overall he was just really good as well. Like he was getting movement on his blocks and blowing guys off the ball. And I think on some levels, like since that calf injury in the beginning, it's an explosion. I've talked about this with actually Jason Huddle It Up, Phil, but like, it's an explosion thing, right? Like the calf impacts your explosion off the line, off the snap. That seems to all be gone now. Like he's fine, and he's a huge key to the run game.
You think he's back in 2026?
It's always tough with him because I think he's so good at what he does, but it's always tough to figure out when to stop re-signing him. Mm-hmm. I think he is back because they love him, and he seems to just always want to come back here. But it's going to have to work out numbers-wise. What do you think, though?
Well, I think it can work out numbers-wise because I don't know who – I'm trying to think of who else they have that they want to give the money to for the veteran VSB, because they have about $1.5 million free. They gave it all to Ricard this year, which means they can pay him like $2.7 million, $2.8 million, and it counts as the vet minimum. So okay, that's really nice to if you can get him for that. The other Tylan Wallace was the other guy they could have given it to this year, and they just signed Wallace to an amount with some void years involved. So they may re-sign Wallace, they may not. I really don't know. And I'm forgetting who they have who's in a fourth year player. But one guy, I guess, if there's no takers on Daniel Falele, he might be a guy you'd give some VSB money to. So you give him the vet minimum, and then you give him some VSB money. It could be a guy. I don't really believe this is going to happen, but Ben Cleveland would be a candidate for it. He's played now four straight years with the Ravens. So I'm not saying it's the right call, by the way. I'm not. If they don't have any confidence in Ben Cleveland, they shouldn't sign Ben Cleveland. But it's owner money that is spent beyond the vet minimum. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, good call. I want him back. I'm always going to want him back.
All right, let's go to the mailbag, if that's okay. We got a few questions here. I want to get through as many as we can here. How are we doing on time here? We got a few minutes, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. From my perspective, we were good. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go to Huddle It Up Films, who you mentioned just recently. That's Jason, our friend who's often been on this show, said Henry and Keaton combined for 25 carries in a game. Is there an ideal split? If so, how many carries each, or would it depend on how well the offensive line is executing if the defense is focused on penetration?
I really liked the split this past game, although I know it is a bit of an optical illusion because they didn't, I think it, the carries also, it was almost an even split or something. So I think more of a 2-1. But I believe like 30, like if you have 30 carries or give or take, like let's say Lamar takes six of those, we're down to like 25, 26. If you can get whatever the math is at that point, you're better at this than I am. 2-1 with, with Henry to Mitchell. I'm okay even to get closer to more 50-50 split, depending on, again, like I think we're at the point now where if Keaton is effective, you just got to figure that out. And then you're talking about Ali, who's really not been running the ball. But like, I think that's where I'm at, is like a 2-1. If in an ideal scenario, like, you know, that's where I would want. Really loved the usage in this game, though. Like eight, I think it was eight carries for Keaton.
Yeah, he had more snaps actually than Henry. One more snap, which is the first time that's happened. So
I'll tell you this, Ken. I had some a buddy of mine text. You know, he's a football fan. He's a Washington fan though, but he was like, Derek's not Henry's not on the field for like the second quarter, and is something wrong with him? Is he injured? And I texted him back. No, I think this is just. This is they're changing it up. They got Mitchell on the field. This is good, and that's fine for me now. I think the times I don't like it is arbitrarily when they don't give Henry the ball when he's like got, you know, he's got momentum. But now it's at the point where there's both of them are playing so well. I think it's a two-headed monster.
Yeah, I'm with you. He is the lightning player. He has not had a lot of career opportunity, obviously. So he's now up. He's just crossed 100 carries with this game. 101 carries career for 721 yards. So 7.1 yards per carry. That's impressive in itself, the 7.1. The other number that's incredibly impressive to me is the 61.4% career success rate. Let me frame that up for you. When Gus Edwards left Baltimore, he had the highest career success rate of any running back in NFL history at 57.4%. Okay, so he's 4 points north of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, Derrick Henry in his remarkable season last year was at 58.8%. And it was the best running back season in the 21st century by DVOA terms. So the success rate with Mitchell has been so outstanding that I think you got to try and sign him. They have an interesting question coming up is how do they deal with his contract situation? He's an RFA. How do you tender him? Because you're not going to give him a second round tender, but there might be a bidder out there who comes in and just takes Mitchell away from you because they're willing to pay him more money than you're willing to pay for him when you have Henry.
Yeah, I think that's on the table as a possibility. They're in a tough spot. Other than if they can just kind of convince, or at that rate, it's kind of out of your hands, like depending on the tender, like you said.
Yep.
They can't really allocate the dollars. They just have too many things, unless they get Lamar done. That's the biggest thing to drop that can then help them in other places. So you hope that's the case, but that's a valid point. I don't want to see him off this offense because I think he adds so much that they need, especially with Henry getting older.
Let's go to one related question. This is from a German fan, Gua Shalou. He had a question on the defense as well that I didn't have time to get to. So I apologize for that, Gua, and I'll try and get back to you online at least to answer it there. I know that we've seen a pony backfield a little bit, but often Keaton comes out of the slot in motion. Okay, so basically that's describing what I call kind of the Washington pony backfield, where they use one as a flanker and they then have him motioning towards the inside of the formation. Major component of misdirection. This game, they actually had both in the backfield, and they had a complex fake handoff one, fake keeper, and then handoff to Henry for the play they actually had. I don't remember how many yards that went for, but it was a very delayed handoff. Let's put it that way.
Was it one against the Bears or? Or is this, I think this game?
This was this game. I thought.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I got them mixed up for a second there. But okay. I wish I had kept kept track of that play closer, but
yeah, I sometimes we write it down on the offensive line sheet when it's a pony, but it doesn't look like we did it this time. I like it both ways, and Gu, I think one of the reasons they use the flanker is that they want to generate misdirection in a very real way. If you have Mitchell running to one side of the field, that's going to move players. That's going to move linebackers. That's going to change assignments. And every time you do that, you give the defense a chance to get themselves out of position for something else the Ravens want to do, whether that's a pass or a run with Lamar or even a run just in the opposite direction with Henry.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's a creation of space. It's widening the defense horizontally. That's something Monken talked about when he took the job. His objective is to create as much space as possible horizontally. So you can do that when they're all utilized in different places, and you can pull the defense. And then ultimately the goal is whoever has the ball will get space to make a big play. So it's just a matter of who gets theirs when they get it. But if you have them both attacking from the same zone or spot, that doesn't happen as easily. And maybe then you open up something vertically. That's the horizontal objective.
All right, let me go to the next question here. This is from Gen X Dads. We saw a little bit more read option this week between Lamar and the running backs. Do you anticipate, now that Lamar seems closer to full health, that Monken will lean into it more going forward? And can it be used effectively in a pony backfield? Keep up the great work. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's kind of got a connective tissue to the prior question. But, I think so. Yeah, just, overall, sure. I think the way Monken called that game, and again, they had no snaps. They didn't have the ball. If in another world, if they had the ball more, I think he would have shown and displayed a lot more of those types of things. That's my theory. We'll find out against New England. But yeah, a lot of this is back to because Lamar is healthy. I do want to see it gets back to misdirection. It gets back to pulling in one direction, getting the defense to bite and move and chase, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on?
Yeah, I think every element of misdirection they have right now is valuable, but they're all magnified by a lot when Lamar is healthy. So if you have Lamar healthy, you want all these other elements of misdirection still. And part of it is you have schematic choices for misdirection as opposed to having forced elements of misdirection. So the big four the Ravens have are the Lamar Henry mesh point is enormous element of misdirection. Automatically, assignments have to be made out of that force players to move around. Number two is jet motion. They use that fairly effectively. You know, number three is counter plays. And we saw a wonderful job in that. Pulling in general, but counter plays in particular will give, big opportunities because multiple assignments have to change when that happens for people to move out of misdirection. And I'm forgetting what the fourth element of misdirection is. It's really bad, but I had them all in my mind and now I don't. But anyway, yes, I love the idea that they would continue with more of that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, you got one more here. This is more of a defensive question, but we can talk about this really briefly. Dependent Vanilla from Reddit. By the way, shout out to the Reddit community. Great community over there that talks football. It's not anymore all about Buck Allen memes, which was going on for a while. I kind of found it kind of tiresome, but I think that they've really got a lot of good conversation going over there. And if you want to find new people to talk football with, they're good, and they're not always connected to the Twitter community, I find.
Oh,
so I find that's a great place to talk football. People found one guy did a great job. Espitan is the user, but did a great job on one of these shows talking football. It was all the offensive show. So he says, when you talk about DBs, you often reference yards per target as a measure for their performance. Do you adjust the stat at all when you're grading safeties? My thinking is that since they are typically carrying the deep routes / generally playing further from the line of scrimmage, they would naturally have a higher yard per target than, say, a corner, especially for a player used in the way Starks is being used. So he's saying I'm beating on Starks for a kind of a not terrific yards per target number. And, it's probably true that your average reception is further from the line of scrimmage. You should have a lower percentage of receptions against you as a safety if they're deep balls. And you should have some turnovers to go with it, that even if your yards per target is a little bit high, you have offsetting interceptions you're getting that will greatly reduce the quarterback rating against. So I think what you're pointing out is a legitimate possibility that I'm not grading safeties on the same scale, or that I'm unfair grading safeties on the same scale as corners, and maybe slot corners are even worse. So I understand the question. I just think also that safety should reduce those. And great safety years, by the way, they will often have very low yards per target numbers.
I tend to defer to your opinion there. Only thing being that, to your point about the frequency being weighted less when they're seeing the ball, opportunities are less. So they're not getting tested nearly the same level of frequency. So maybe that somewhere in there should be factored into the breakdown.
I didn't want to toss this in there. So Starks for the year now, I don't think he's terrible or anything. He's given up, let's see, how many yards in coverage? 363 on 36 targets. Yeah, he's 10.1 yards per target. Okay, so that's not good. Not by safety standards, not by any standards. But I could take a look at that, and I'll try and put something out maybe in a short video to talk about where that ranks relative to other safeties across the NFL this year. Let's talk. Go to the MVPs. We haven't had MVPs the last couple of weeks because of the losses, but it's nice to be finally get a chance to talk about that. Do you have a number three guy?
Number three. I think I'm going to go back to Mr. Kohler.
Okay.
Thought he was very. It's like a to me like an under the radar type deal, right? Just what he did for that run game. And what you know of Ricard, I could go with Ricard, right? But I just thought that was a nice, nice overall. I want to throw a bone his way, given that the job was it's not glamorous, right? So
that's true.
Yeah.
I like it. There's people come on the show and they do one of three things. They either do it straight up and they truly try and figure out value and whatnot. And that's kind of the way I do it. I'd say they come on and they pick three players who made contributions that didn't get seen, or Josh used to do the show with me years ago, and he would always like pick the cat or the referee or something like that. So you got funny, you got under the radar performances. So you're an under the radar guy. That's good. We won't have the same players on our list. I have Zay Flowers as my number three guy. Up and down game for Zay, but I thought he made enough positive contributions to this game that his impact needs to be on the scale.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. He's just had a very good season, and I think he's one of the few guys that's been just there constant every week. Number two, I will give to Mr. No, I'll give it to eight. I'll give number two to eight. Yeah, just it's coming to me. Like that big game is coming. I'm hopeful. A lot of good things. I think you Ravens fans should be very encouraged with what they saw. And it's coming. He's gonna have to take over soon, and it might just even be this Sunday night. And I think he's pretty close to that doorstep.
Same spot. Jackson gets it for me as well. And I think that the only area where I'd really like to see Jackson be a different player in any way is be the kind of leader, maybe fiery. He could take a lot of different angles to leadership if you're Lamar Jackson. But the best situation is when every other player on that team thinks, man, I'm glad he's our quarterback. And we had that when Marshall Yanda was playing with Lamar. Yanda, I mean, the funny thing is, remember the Seattle play in 2018, right? 19. So yeah. The first Marcus Peters game, and they went for it on 4th-and-2, and Lamar ran for an 8-yard touchdown. But before that play, Harbaugh asked Lamar, you want to go for it? And he goes, he turns to Marshall Yanda. He says, what do you think? You want to go for it? It's clear who the leader was on the team. And Marshall's response is great. He says, absolutely, you're my guy kind of thing. Marshall was right to push that leadership back onto Lamar. He can't let Ronnie Stanley or Tyler Linderbaum or even DeAndre Hopkins, all of whom have leadership qualities, be the leader of this team. He needs to be it, both on the field and off the field, in terms of if the offensive lineman he's talking to, it's okay for him to get upset with them. It really is. If he's getting pissed off because an exchange isn't working out and there are fumbles being caused, that's okay. Talk to the guy during the game, and you can use whatever method is effective, but those players are going to appreciate playing for you. And that's the way that relationship really needs to work.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes when he's talking to them behind the scenes. Exactly.
Yeah.
There are things that he's done this season I feel like he's become more vocal about, and his outlook on what the team really should be focusing on, which I like, which I'm happy that he's doing. It is his team. It's mm-hmm. absolutely something he needs to do. But yeah.
All right. And your number one guy?
Oh, number one. Sorry. Yeah. I'll probably be pretty boring here, but I'll go back to King Henry, because getting to those two, Henry, Lamar, I, the way they looked physically, probably one of the biggest takeaways, aside from some of the things we saw in defense, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you were to bookmark it and say, this is why I believe in the Ravens to be a dark horse the rest of the way. Yeah, those two looked like they were ready. And I just liked the way Henry was, again, back to himself attacking. We've talked about it. We talked about it a lot in the first show, I think. Just, I don't need to cover the same ground, but yeah, he to me was the key guy. Those runs at the end of the half, maybe not even as much of an influence directly on this win, right? But like, mm-hmm. it sets everything else up, hopefully, to come.
Yeah, yeah, great stuff. And Dev, always appreciate talking football with you. This is just a great 2 hours. It flies by when we have these discussions. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, no, appreciate you having me. It was a fun time, and glad to do this particular show. Hopefully it leads to a playoff run. But as far as where to find me, I'm at Dev Panchois on Twitter, and also on Russell Street Report. And you can catch me with long form articles there. But otherwise, all my analysis day to day is on X, and ask me a question and talk to me about the rest of the season. Even if it's something negative, I'll talk to you about it, and we'll have a respectful back and forth.
All right. Outstanding to have you again. Other folks out there, if you want to do something nice for the show, first of all, word of mouth to one extra person is always worth it. I always go for that over algorithmic needs. We're going to try and get more algorithmic attention for the show, but the word of mouth attention is usually the best, because you're talking to people like you who you already think might like the show, and that has real value to me. So I appreciate that. And otherwise, if you want to, write a 5-star 50-word review on your favorite podcast platform. Dev, thanks again for coming on.
I appreciate it, Ken. Thanks as always.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.